Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another show of At Home with Victoria, with your host, Victoria Gaither, and co-host, Michael Kay.
The show off tonight. H-O-T, hot, hot, hot. Hi, everybody. Listen, so happy that you guys are here to join us tonight on At Home with Victoria. I am Victoria Gaither, television news anchor, host, and I don't know, I could probably, Michael, add at least, what, five or six more things behind my name. MK, we've been talking about this before the show, dude. When you walk out your door and you literally do nothing and you start sweating, it's hot.
It is like walking into a mouse. I can't put it any other way. It was actually topping at 102 here today, and the humidity is through the roof. So yeah, it was too hot to get into the pool. If I hate to go ahead and say that, it was like ugh, whatever. Even the cats, I opened the door and the cats are like, I ain't going outside. What the hell's wrong with you?
It must be too hot if it's too hot to get into your own swimming pool. The swimming pool is like a big giant bathtub with hot water in it if it's that hot. But listen, I'm excited about our show tonight. And what's cool about a lot of the shows that entertainment co-host Michael Kay books is that, you know, people think that I always have the inside scoop on everything. Sometimes I do and sometimes I don't. So I'm excited to learn more about the Bit Flap tonight. I just love saying the word, by the way, Michael. And also we're going to hear some music from American Idol contestant Molly Hunt. So with that said, Michael, how did you come to find out about the series Bitch Slap?
Well, Bitch Slap actually is a play that was opened initially for a limited run in Los Angeles. Our good friend and returning guest, Michael Taylor Gray, is acting in it alongside with veteran actors Stephen Foster and Therese McLaughlin. And I was very excited because it's really the story of Joan Crawford, Betty Davis, and Hedda Hopper back in the grand old Hollywood era. And Stephen and Michael also played Betty Davis and Joan Crawford in drag. And I tell you, Stephen Foster's imitation of Betty Davis is an impersonation. It's not even an imitation, and it's a fantastic thing. I was able to go ahead and catch some of the clips up on YouTube, and it was pretty amazing. So I'm very, very thrilled to have them all with us tonight. So, Vic, I see that you've kind of dropped, so go ahead and pick up the line. I'm going to go ahead and start off the show with a little bit of Molly Hunt. Molly Hunt really wanted to be with us tonight. However, she got a big fancy audition tonight. So she's going to be actually not joining us. But we're going to play some of her music anyways. We're going to start off a little bit of time right now with Molly Hunt and her big actual song, Radio. You can go ahead and find Molly Hunt on YouTube, Reverb Nation, Twitter, and MySpace. So when we come back, we're going to actually listen to the cast of Bitch Slap. So don't go away. This is Molly Hunt with Radio.
Came out like la-di-da and did it dumb.
Molly Hunt Radio is the song title. 16-year-old, now living in Nashville, Tennessee, and we'll be hearing more of her music a little bit later, as well as now I introduce you to, and drum roll please, the biggest mess of actors I've ever been able to witness and laugh at. Michael Taylor Gray is joining us, Stephen Foster is joining us,
oh,
and Therese McLaughlin is joining us from The Hit. You guys, congratulations on the extended run. Let's go to Teresa first. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Doing fantastic.
We're super insanely exciting that we've extended, and I'm sorry that you guys are sweating your ghoulies off in New York, because here in Southern California, it's been beautiful and lovely and cool.
Yeah, no, it's 104, and actually, I want to apologize this for everybody who wants to know. Victoria actually has been bitch-slapped off the air. They're not allowing her back in the system, so she's listening to us actually right now.
I arranged that with my minions. I'm moving in. I'm sorry, Victoria, but your job is mine. Bitch, you're mine.
Michael Taylor Gray, tell us a little bit about the exact premise of Bitch Slapped. How did it come about? How did everything happen?
I'm sorry, Michael. I just got a call from my agent. I got a big audition. I got to go.
There you go, Molly.
Yeah, Molly, I'll be right there.
Hi, Michael.
Well, hi, honey. Now, give me, it's our playwright.
Hi, Joni.
Hi, Betty. It's Darren, right? Darren Hagen or Daryl? I always get the
Darren.
Darren, as in the first Darren, like Bewitched.
Yeah.
Darren Hagen. He's a very well-known drag performer in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada.
Really?
And he wrote this. He created the play. It was at a Fringe Fest up in Canada, and so bringing it down here was it's the LA premiere of it. And a bunch of the framework of the show kind of comes from there's a really wonderful book that's just got a wealth of information about the lives of Betty and Joan called The Divine Feud, and it really gives us their whole Hollywood history and the history of their relationship, and so that's a good source to go to if you're interested in finding out more about the two of them and their relationship and their careers in Hollywood. And so the show had a life there at the Fringe Festival, and then he's our director and producer at the Matcha Theater, Odalise Nannan, got wind of this particular project and thought it would be a great project to have here. She just had an instinct that it would do well in West Hollywood, no doubt.
Stover.
Queens and West Hollywood.
Yeah,
is that really going to work? Then we worked our little tookuses off, and I tell you, the chemistry between the three of us, I've known of Stephen, but I've never worked with Stephen, and Therese and I met at the audition, and at that first read-through, that first rehearsal, we knew we had something special, and it's just a joy, and it really just, the framework of the play is really, it's the history of the feud between the infamous feud between Betty Davis and Joan Crawford. And it really details the length of their career during the time they knew each other, and actually worked together that one time on Whatever Happened to Baby Jane. That was the one project that they actually worked on together. So, during the play, we do some scenes from Whatever Happened to Baby Jane where we're rehearsing, and one of the two is always interrupting the take by talking to the director and complaining about something. And then the lovely Hedda Hopper is our queen pin of the evening, and she really directs us and keeps us moving along and gives you a lot of the Hollywood history. And she does a lot of the interviews with them on stage at the Brown Derby to get all the good dirt. And she opens up the show and she wraps it up and gives you that. She wraps it up with a really nice Hollywood glitzy bow. And that's sort of the yin and yang of it all.
Right. Now, Stephen, you've been doing Betty Davis in drag for years, so this must be the role of a lifetime. I mean, your impersonation is brilliant, might I say, young lady.
Well, thank you very much. You're right, I've been doing Betty Davis since 2000. And I had a show produced called Legends and Bridge, which I wrote, which was about Joan Crawford, Betty Davis, and Judy Garland living together in the 1960s. And I did that in 2004. and I was becoming quite well known for doing Betty Davis, but I stopped doing her because I wanted to focus on becoming known as a comedic man more than just, you know, like a Charles Pierce or a Jim Bailey. I wanted people to know that it was me that was underneath that dress. So the fact that I'm doing Betty Davis
you,
now.
We know it's you.
What? You know it's me.
We know it's you. I recognize you.
And so the fact that I'm doing this now, it's such a lark and it's such a fun show, and I get to work with such wonderful, talented people on stage that, you know, every night that we go out there, it's not like a performance so much. It's more like a party that we're all, that the three of us are having up there, because we just have the time of our lives. And I think that's why audiences are really responding to it, because we, as Michael said, we have kick-ass chemistry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very, very important for such a small ensemble cast. Now, Therese, before, you know what, I am an absolute nutbag when it comes to Betty Davis and Joan Crawford. I know a lot of inside information that I don't know if we all know and stuff, so we'll get into that a little bit later. But Therese, I want to ask you, too, how good did Hedda Hopper actually know Bette and Joan?
Well, did you hear that? Stevie, he said Bette.
He called me Bet. I'm a bitch slapping right now. I'm flying out to New York.
He's gonna come and kick your ass, but you could take him. Well, so here, the what I understand about the relationship with Hedda Hopper and Luella Parsons and stuff, they refer often to Hedda Hopper as the Perez Hilton of the time, but actually I think it was much more critical mass than that. The gossip columnist. Yeah, I can talk really good because I'm an actor.
Tourette's kicking in.
They really did make or break the careers of the famous people, because I had it says in the opening monologue, if the press don't love you, you don't get mentioned. If you don't get mentioned, you don't get work. And that was absolutely true, because we didn't have 24/7 audio and video and TV and movies and streaming. You had your really only access to the who was what and who was doing what were the papers. Were the papers, and the gossip columnists really drove the entertainment scene to where they wanted to drive it, or where it was most important to drive it. So she knew them for years and years and years throughout their entire careers, and I was shocked and stunned to find out really that so much of the Hollywood power players really kind of had to kiss her ass, that, you know, to keep on her good side was very, very important. There's even an episode of I Love Lucy where Hedda Hopper is featured. And it was crazy. There are videos, you can see them on YouTube, and audio of her showing up at studios, and people would sing songs for her. So the setup really was, they had to just massage and love on her to keep their names in the forefront.
And what was the name of Hedda's mansion?
It was called, thank you very much, Michael. Her mansion, and this is actually true. I thank God these guys are here to leave me alone, because I wouldn't make it to the theater unless someone told me.
You're pretty, dude.
Thanks. That's all that counts, and that's all that counts.
That's what all the reviewers said. She's pretty.
I know. Thank God. She's
and what
pretty.
Was the name of your back on track? What was the name of your mansion?
The house was called the mansion was called the house that Fear built, and it was jokingly and referred to that, but they actually did refer to her home as the house that Fear built. And so she kind of had everybody under her thumb. They had to woo her at every turn in order to keep their name in the papers, in order to keep their name in the front of the forefront, so that people would want to see their film. It was kind of crazy.
And not only did she obviously have her finger on the pulse of the stars in Hollywood and said and withheld information as much as she gave it, but she was also very good friends with a very important political figure of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, she was friends. Michael, you're so good. She was well, because he knows I need. I'm a special student. She was friends with J. Edgar Hoover, so she had the goods, or as I accidentally referred to him on stage, Edward J. Hoover one night. Edgar J. Hoover. But she was friends with him because she had. I don't know. Sad. She had a lot of dirt on people, so she would tell and she wouldn't tell, and. What I came to find out later, too, was that she was one of the people who named names in the McCarthy hearings. None of that is written into the script, and the character, the way Hedda is written in the script, is really more of a conduit into the world and a sort of tour guide around the world that we're in of Joan and Betty. But she's a fascinating character.
Yeah. Well, also, too, I believe, Hedda Hopper was a ball breaker, definitely, but rumor has it, through my little readings, is that she actually helped found the Lavender Club, the first gay and lesbian sort of, like, bar back in that time, too.
Yeah.
And now, rumor has it, too, that Hedda was a big lesbian. Was that true?
Well,
that's Joan.
So, what do you think? I don't know. I know that she was sort of an early on activist in gay rights, but you know, so many people in the town were gay and lesbian and were having the same closet, so it would only behoove her to, you know.
Well, didn't you have a gay son?
Yeah, but they were all married, so it's all really confusing. You know, they all got married and you know, made little bisexual children. And so I don't know who was gay and who was straight. I think for the most part, if the rumors were out there that she was probably gay, she probably was, even though she was married and had a husband and had kids.
Well, everybody needs a good beard from now and then. But Stephen, let's go to Betty. What was Betty's big problem with Joan? I mean, back in the day, why was it a jealousy thing? Was it a quest for perfection? Was it a competition era? Or what did you find out when you were rehearsing this?
Well, I think it was because, first of all, they were both Aries women.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Aries are like, they have to be in control and they have to have power. And I think Betty was at a studio. She was at Warner Brothers, where it was all work. It was work, work, work. In fact, Betty made 55 movies while she was at Warner Brothers in 18 years. And I think that Betty didn't hate Joan so much as that she envied the fact that she was such a star. And she was always given the like star treatment over at MGM, and
mm-hmm.
Betty never got that. And also, Joan was a lot prettier than Betty Davis, and I think she was a little jealous of that fact. And
you heard it here, kid.
What?
You heard it here, kid.
That's right. And
well, and she had a lot of men that Betty wanted.
That's right. And Joan got all the men, all the glamour, all the star treatment, and little Betty got all the great parts and worked her ass off, but never got any of the, I mean, she got two Oscars, but she never got the star treatment that Joan got. So I think that was and also she didn't think Joan Crawford was anything as an actress.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't respect
her
as an
actress.
Joan
got all the ass and worked her parts off.
What's that? What's that? What'd you say?
You said Betty got all the parts and worked her ass off. I said Joan got all the ass and worked her parts off.
Exactly.
Work
exactly.
with me, kids. Work with me.
Oh,
Betty's a little hard of hearing because all she hears in her head is me, 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 me,
me, me, me, me, me. Bullshit my line.
I tell you. Michael, tell me from your understanding, what was Joan's problem with Betty?
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure her range was what it was, and she knew what she was good at. Betty was had more experience, I think, starting from the stage, and really was truly an actress first, and was really dedicated to the craft of it. And I think there's a part of Joan that, you know, she really focused on moving up the ranks through the business and saw the movie star part of it and
mm-hmm.
what it took to make that happen. That was a full-time job. And she even says in the show, you know, when I leave the house, I'm Joan Crawford, the movie star.
Mm-hmm.
And to her, she took that very seriously. So that whole, she bought into all of that and she became this persona. Like her real name is Lucille LeSueur. And, but there was a contest to come up with a name for her. And the studio put a list of qualities that they believed that she possessed. What name would fit those qualities? And I think it was some woman in upstate New York or whatever that came up with the name, the winning name, and that was Joan Crawford. And so she became that persona. I think she was certainly envious of the roles and the kinds of, you know, roles that Betty was able to play. But interestingly enough, the, one of the roles that Betty turned down was Mildred Pierce.
Mm-hmm.
And she did The Corn is Green instead, and then that's when Joan finally got her, her one Oscar.
Right.
So I'm sure she was envious of the craft that Betty had, but she also, she embraced her sense of what it meant to be a part of Hollywood for what she was able to contribute just as much in her own way.
Right. You're just tuning in. You're listening to the cast of Bitch Slapped, Michael Taylor Gray, Stephen Foster, and Therese McLaughlin.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to go ahead and take some calls in a little while, but I'm going to go ahead and thank Marby in Nashville for doing a great production in chat. Michael Taylor Gray, Sandy from Nebraska is joining us. Shannon Sybil from the UK is in the house, and our new
audience. Hi, Shannon.
Guest. Hello, Shannon, everybody. Shannon's also listening to Shelley Rann on stage. Shelley Rann has a concert on stage tonight at this exact time. We should have planned this a little bit better, but she's doing double duty. But let's go ahead and listen to a bit of Molly Hunt, who she couldn't be here because she has a very, very fancy audition. But
at night.
We love you, Molly. Can't wait to have you back. Anyways.
That's when the fancy auditions happen, Stephen, only at night.
Absolutely. Hubba hubba. Everybody, this is Molly Hunt. He Only Broke My Heart. We'll be right back with the cast of Bitch Slap. Don't go anywhere.
Cause I'm gonna cry like the one crashing down.
Hunt, he only broke my heart. It's pretty funny, at 15, he can break your heart, but at 42, you want to break his things.
His thing or his thing?
Let's get into a little bit of background information about Betty Joan. Here's a piece of information that I have. During the filming of Whatever Happened to Baby Jane, while Joan was in the chair, Joan was actually recovering from, I think it was either back surgery or a slip disc or what have you. So basically she had asked Betty to go ahead and take it easy on her in the kicking scene, which I tell you is the best scene in that movie when Bette's kicking Joan around.
I love it.
I couldn't laugh any harder. It's impossible. But would that be true to your eyes? Is that information you have as well? Let's go to Stephen.
I know that they used a double for part of it, but then they had to use a close up for when she actually kicks her in the head, and Betty did graze her head.
Yeah.
You see, I had to have two stitches, and it took forever for the bump to go down.
But Betty says that she never kicked her, so that's kind of mythical. I don't think Betty would really do that.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
I think Betty would. I think she had it in her. I think the two of them. I think that was definitely a sparring match, and I couldn't imagine the first table read when it actually went around. I think I would have loved to be a fly on the wall during that. But Therese, when it comes to Betty and Joan, who was your favorite?
Yeah.
Oh, now be nice. Take your time.
I know.
Take your time.
Take your time.
Oh my God! I'm the kind of strangest.
I was up for that pot.
Oh, I'll help you out. It's Joan. It's Joan.
Life is like a box of chocolate. who was my favorite? Couldn't even begin.
Well, let's say as Hedda Hopper. As Hedda Hopper, did Hedda actually favor one over the other?
You know, I don't know that
question.
Actually. I'm not really sure, and I honestly don't have the answer to that question. But so let me make one up.
Okay.
I think she probably would have been. This is completely speculative, so let's print it and put it on the front page.
Yeah.
I think that she probably would have sided a bit more or felt more close to Betty. Because Betty was a ball buster, too. Betty was, I mean, Joan was a very, very carefully calculated lady.
Yeah,
Betty was
very much.
Ball busting broad. And I think Hedda, coming from a line of ball busting broads as well, would have probably related more. So that's just opinion and speculation, but it kind of seems like it would make sense. You know, that would make sense. She's a baldy dame. Love all those words, too. Baldy dame.
Yeah, because I think it makes sense because Betty had her guard down more, and Joan had that veneer that she just never really let go of, and you can really see it even later on in her life and in whatever interviews that she gave towards the end as well. She was really holding on to that sense of that creature of the camera that she created.
Yeah. Oh, mm-hmm. Honey, I thought your veneer was just the hot sauce you eaten before the show.
Right.
Right.
Michael, was Joan able to play the game with Hedda Hopper? I guess what I'm actually inferring is that Joan Crawford was actually larger than Hedda Hopper. So did Joan still have to go ahead and kind of kiss Hedda's ass a little bit?
Well, everybody did. I mean, they were the power brokers. If they wanted news about their movie, if they wanted press, if they wanted, I mean, Joan was very calculated. She knew how to get her name in the papers. I mean, she. When Betty's first movie opened, ironically enough, titled Ex-Lady.
Hmm.
No irony
lost
there.
It was a piece of shit.
Right. It was. But the day it was supposed to open, splashed across the papers was Joan Crawford's divorce announcement Douglas Fairbanks Jr.
Yeah,
she knew, Joan knew, that, you know, if things were getting kind of low, kind of, she wasn't getting, things weren't happening in Hollywood. And the same thing when she married Alfred Steele from Pepsi Cola, who was the CEO of Pepsi Cola. It was her fourth marriage. So you got to get your name in the papers. And that's how they did it, you know.
Yeah. Let's go into some of, you mentioned you have scenes from Whatever Happened to Baby Jane. I was wondering if we could have a sample, Michael and Stephen.
Oh, my Lord.
Ooh,
oh,
dear God.
Do my favorite. Come on.
Which one, what do you want to start? Act two? Top act two? Drive or something. You know, it's been so long since we had a talk, a real talk about the future and everything. Jane, I didn't want you to be worried about the house. Even if I have to sell it, we'll still be together.
Christ, it's freezing in here. Can somebody turn up the heat?
The room has kept chilled at my request, dear.
Chilled? It's bloody freezing in here. Look, the boom operator has mittens on.
I know. I knitted them myself. With all due respect, Betty, dear, the boom operator is not on camera. How do they fit? Oh, good.
1 degree colder and I'll be able to see my breath.
But I've learned over the years that screen makeup stays fresh longer when the set is kept chilled. One wants to look one's best when one's on camera. I'm sorry. You obviously don't care about that, Betty, dear.
Fine. Fine, let's continue. But if I get frostbite, I'll sue.
And she would, too, if she could.
Yes.
I tell you, Betty, you're brilliant. I really, honest to God, Steve, when you said you had a high voice, I had no idea that actually your male-speaking voice was actually, you know, higher than Betty's natural-speaking voice was. But it's just brilliant. Let's go to our favorite Betty Davis and Joan Crawford movie, starting with Therese.
Yeah. What?
Favorite movie, Joan. Favorite movie, Betty.
She's blonde now, honey. You've got to talk slow.
I saw she's pretty on her IMDb page. Is that haircut new, honey?
Yes, they removed a little bit extra. I don't know what happened to me.
Oh my God.
I don't know. Okay, I think I love Baby Jane so much, I gotta say, I mean, in terms of, because I'm living it right now, so that's really all that's in the front of my, forefront of my mind, but I do love Mildred Pierce.
Yeah.
I have to say, I love Mildred Pierce, and I love Dark Victory.
Yeah.
But, yeah, and you know, right before I was going to audition for this, I sat in my kitchen and watched Baby Jane again, and I was sitting there watching on my computer because I downloaded it off from Netflix, and I was just screaming and clapping and jumping up and down. I hadn't watched it in a few years, and so that now is my super duper favorite. But in terms of the individual performances, I would say I would vote for Dark Victory because you can dance to it, and Mildred Pierce because it's got a really good beat.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Very nice. Steven, let's see yours. Best Betty, best Joan.
Okay. My favorite Joan movie is Trog.
Oh, you mean. You're so mean.
That. Oh, shit. I didn't remember that.
And good one.
Damn.
I mean, Joan is just so Joan in Trog.
Yeah.
Trog.
And my favorite Betty Davis movie is Now Voyager.
That's a good one, absolutely. Michael Taylor Gray, let's go to you.
Well, I would say probably for Betty be tied between two, Of Human Bondage, because you didn't win for that one, did you, Betty?
Yeah.
No, I didn't. They rigged it.
Okay, right. So she lost that, and for The Corn is Green, you didn't win for that one either, did you?
No, I didn't. I lost some other
right. one. So I would say those are probably two of my favorite Betty Davis movies for very subtle reasons. And for Joan, you know, wow. Trog is up there. She did use her own wardrobe, but it's hard not to point towards. You know what? I'm gonna go away from Mildred Pierce, and I'm gonna say The Women.
Yes,
that's yeah, right, absolutely.
That's my second choice.
I love her crypto. I love that role when she says, "There's a name for you, ladies, but it isn't used in high society outside of a kennel."
Yeah.
You know, I love that movie.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Therese, let's go off board here a little bit. You got a new movie that you just finished called Rapture. How was that? What was that? What are we looking forward to seeing?
Oh, so funny. Did you looked me up?
I did.
Oh, he does his homework,
honey. I'm a grown-up. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, I know. Well, Rapture, actually, the movie that I most recently finished. I'll talk to you about Rapture actually, because it was sort of fun. We did Rapture was a movie. I think it's out on DVD or coming out on DVD, and it was a post-apocalyptic or pre-into and then apocalyptic movie about the actual the Rapture, and not sort of in the way that I'll speak for myself, that I like to make fun of, but. What it was was the four horsemen start to come and all of the plagues start hitting the earth, and I'm a real estate person, and so we're shooting out in the middle of the desert. We're in Lancaster and Acton, and if you haven't been to Lancaster or Acton in Southern California in August, let me just describe it. It is like being in a giant litter box that's under a broiler. And that was kind of the entire thing. So, and then I get struck by lightning and killed. So that was kind of fun. And to watch the special effects, it was the first time I actually got to see my own dead body on a set. And it was great because the thing was the skeleton, like I'd gotten hit by lightning and the skeleton was smoking, but the hair was still on it. I was like, wow, my character must have used some powerful hairspray. This character spray will survive the apocalypse, even if you don't. So that was a really great director doing his own thing. And then I just did another film that's just come out on DVD called Phil Cobb's Dinner for Four, and I play the ex-wife of the man who is cataloging basically his last day. Being here. Doesn't know it, but he's actually going to have a heart attack. And I'm his very loudmouthed, obnoxious, very Brooklyn ex-wife.
I don't see it.
You're so soft-spoken.
I know. I don't know that you could imagine that. So those little projects, and thank you for asking about those. Yeah, we're out on Amazon, I think.
Oh wow!
Oh yeah, I have an audition. I gotta go.
Yeah, me too.
Another one.
And Michael's acting advice is always, which I do so love. Michael, would you like to give everyone your acting advice?
Lower your stakes, raise your voice.
There we go.
and if that doesn't equal brilliance every time, I don't know what to say.
Under promise and over deliver all the time.
There you go. That's Betty's mantra.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Speaking of Betty, Stephen, Awaken the Actor Within, now on Amazon.com. How's the sales going? Fantastic book. I haven't had a chance to read it. I'm waiting for an autographed copy that will hopefully find its way to my mailbox. But tell us a little about that. Tell us about the book.
Well, it's a book about recovering and discovering your authentic acting talents. I wrote it because a lot of actors are frustrated and have a difficult time, and I wanted to sort of give them a roadmap of, like, tools that they could use to keep themselves inspired and to keep going, whereas, like, everything in this town is geared to, like, how can you book more roles, how can you, land a commercial in 5 easy steps, and I wanted this book to be more of, like, what can I do as an actor and tools? What can I do to keep myself on course when I'm discouraged? And so that's sort of why I wrote it, to help actors not be so discouraged. And so it's like a workbook for actors to work through week by week to keep themselves in shape and inspired in this very tricky and sometimes very discouraging business.
Yeah, like the actor's exercise manual, so to speak.
Yeah,
it's
based on a course that I taught in Hollywood for many years as I was acting. It grew from the book The Artist's Way by Julia Cameron, which is basically a book about recovering yourself as an artist. And when I uncovered or recovered my talent as an actor, I realized there's a whole kettle of fish that go along with just acting that I had to unblock and get over just to continue on in my acting journey. So that's why I wrote it. I wrote it to help other actors.
Well, you're just
a
giver, Stephen.
She just wrote it to be nosy and get in your business. Let's be real.
Mr. Michael Taylor Grace, season 4 of Pretty is coming up.
Yay!
I love that you said that. Yeah, well, Steve Silverman, as you know, our beloved creator of the show, is working on his next project called The Inn with Emma Caulfield and Denise Alexander. And that's also going to be on geeknation.com, which is where Pretty is migrating to. They're going to finance our 4th season. And so it looks like we'll start shooting probably like at the end of the year, the very top of 2000 and lucky year 2013. So I'm thrilled. Just the fact that it's in the very near future, I'm thrilled to get back into the mix.
Now, does he have you cut out for a little bit of a part in The Inn?
That I have to find out. And if anybody who's in our chat room right now, our fans on Facebook, want to, you know, put a little nudge in there, I'm all for it. I'm, you know, subtlety. I'm past subtlety, honey. I just turned 46. Subtlety's out the door.
Yes, happy birthday. I saw that. Happy birthday to Michael Taylor Grace.
Happy birthday, Joni.
Happy birthday, baby. And was subtlety ever in?
No.
Never.
Not for us, for God's sake.
No, not our generation.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not at all. You guys feel like taking a call?
Sure.
We're going to go to the
402. Hi, welcome to Home of Victoria. Can I have your first name, please?
This is Sandy. Hey, MK.
Hey, Sandy from Nebraska. Welcome to the cast of Bitch Slap.
I'm so honored to be here with all of these bitches.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sandy.
I wish I could see it in person.
Oh,
Sandy,
you
got a,
too, honey.
You got a question, Sandy?
Yes, I did. I wanted to ask all the actors, okay, besides Bitch Slap, what is the best role or a role that you really enjoyed doing throughout your career that you've had so far?
Let's go to Michael first.
Well, I think, the very first role that I tackled that gave me that glimmer of, God, this is what I do for the rest of my life. My freshman year in college, I got a chance to do the MC in Cabaret. And
oh,
got also,
amazing.
Yeah, and also got introduced to the world of Joel Grey and what he brought to that particular role. And just the amount of work that went into that. And I was so young and naive and just willing to just try anything. And that kind of just throwing it in head first, you know, and just really going into it. That was such a joy, and that really kind of launched things for me, and I'll never forget that particular experience and that particular role and how freeing it was as an artist. It was fantastic, so I would say definitely. I would love to do it again, and I think I'm at the right age to actually should be doing it.
Great. Great.
Let's go to Therese.
Who else? Hi, Therese, by the way. Nice to meet you.
Sandy, good to meet you, too. It's a hard question. I'm sitting there racking my brain for, like, have I ever been in any other place before in my entire life? I just can't remember right now what's happening. I think when I was young, I loved to do a lot of improv. I did a lot of improv. So all of those. But in terms of, like, roles, you know, I had a guest one time doing – out, and not the kind of guest that Michael Taylor Grey has in the dressing room. I had a guest doing outdoor theater in the Midwest one summer when I did Annie Get Your Gun, and I played Annie Oakley the Shy and Divine. And we actually got to use horses, like real horses, real guns, and everything. So Annie Oakley would come, like, riding onto the stage, which was outside. It was a 3-acre stage, on horseback, shooting my gun and singing. It was pretty amazing, and I have to say, you know, it was one of those peak moments where I would just look up, and there'd be the full moon coming up, and I'd be on a horse singing, and I would think, is this really me? Is this really happening to me? And it was like a 5,000-seat amphitheater. It was just one of those insane, so big. It was bigger than anything I'd ever seen myself sort of doing. But
and
in
truth
terms
be told.
Of sheer,
truth be told, Therese does occasionally break into song and swing a couple of six shooters around on stage, regardless
no,
whether
I know,
it's appropriate or not.
Yeah.
You have to, whether it's appropriate or not, I know. And forgive me for that, Michael. I was so sorry I grazed you with that bullet that day, but it will heal.
That's right. So it's just a graze.
One of my dogs will lick your wound.
As long as his name's Bruno and he's 6'2".
Yeah,
yeah.
So
Bruno the dog.
That was really fun and outrageous. I've always enjoyed.
Absolutely.
Let's
go to Steven.
Okay, my favorite part is one that I'm still currently working on. It's a movie that I'm working on called Off Hollywood, and I play this quirky character named Davis, who gets called to Hollywood by the ghost of Orson Welles to save it from the doldrums of sequels, prequels, and remakes. And he inevitably ends up making a porn, and everything goes haywire. So that's my favorite character that I've ever worked on, and just a fun group of people that I've been involved with for several years while I've made this movie. So that's my favorite.
Wow. Sounds great. Sandy, answer
your
question.
Well, thank you, you guys. Thank you so much. And
thank you, Sandy.
I'm so happy to be joining you guys on At Home with Victoria. Have
thank
a good
you.
Night.
Sandy.
Have a great
love
night. We'll
all.
Have some wine.
Thanks. Thank you.
Yeah, she's going to get drunk now, I tell you that much. Anyways,
I wish I were.
Well, pour yourself a glass. What are you waiting for?
Oh, yeah.
I thought you were
absolutely.
Already.
But you're on the chair.
Yeah.
We've got a few minutes left here. I wanted to go ahead. There was something actually on the internet that I found very disturbing today. It was the Karen Huff video, the bus monitor that was bullied by the children. And I mean, I certainly have my own point of view as to, and of course, my point of view doesn't matter. So I don't want any emails whatsoever on this stuff. But let's go to Therese first.
Yeah.
You saw it? Did you see it?
Oh,
what did
yeah.
you think? Yeah.
Incredibly disturbing. I got through a couple of minutes before I started to cry, and then I had to stop. But I thought, I got to watch this. I have to watch this. I must make myself watch this because it's my responsibility to see what's going on out there. And I really was devastated. And I donated to the, it used to be the Send Karen Huff on a Vacation. I think it's now Let's Help This Woman Retire.
Yeah, over 300,000 at last check. So
yes,
it was pretty good.
Yes.
And that's on Indiegogo. You can go ahead
and
find it
on
my page. Yeah,
so you can,
Indiegogo.
Yep, yeah, yeah. So I was devastated for her, and I'm speechless as to, well, and that's pretty hard for me to be.
Yeah, absolutely.
As to the behavior of those kids. And, I would like to bitch slap each and every one of them with their little bare buttocks out in front of the entire school to see. And, and then I'd like this woman to have a very lovely, long, happy retirement where she never has to deal with little.
Yeah,
you know,
I agree. Stephen, would you not agree that the parents have something to do with this?
Well, to be honest, I didn't see the video, but I've heard people's comments on it. And I just think that people like that, just the parents and everybody just needs to be held totally responsible. And I think people like that need to be called out all the time.
Absolutely.
Bullies, and I don't care if it's like a bully like that situation or someone bullying a gay kid or even at a job. I think anyone that's a nuisance like that needs to be called out.
Yeah, I agree.
That's just my opinion, because bullying goes on at that level, but it also goes on at jobs and all kinds of places where people feel that way. And I think everyone that's an asshole needs to be called out on it. That's just my opinion.
No, I agree.
Keep that
fully.
Line, honey.
Yeah, I agree. Michael Taylor Gray, any thoughts?
Well, any thoughts? Oh, wow. You know, it's the power of social media. Thank God for it. As much as it overtakes our lives at times and you have to pull back from it, thank God we have it, because the immediacy of it, the power of it, and how it can affect change. I mean, look at the Arab Spring that led to our own Occupy Wall Street here in America, and you see the power of social media and how it can really get people to react and take action, and really affect social change at a pace that we've never seen before. So, I'm really thankful and it's just so much is coming to the surface. So much, it's overwhelming. I mean, All the good and the ugliness is rising to the surface at the same time.
Yeah.
And it's just a little overwhelming. But
and the great part is that no one will escape it. As long as there's a friggin' iPhone, everybody is 100% right on.
It's like, it's like
well, the level of accountability now. You can't, you can't escape the accountability.
Yeah, watch what you do because we're watching, you know.
Yeah.
And maybe, and maybe you'll think twice before you, you know, before you open your friggin' mouth and say something stupid and abusive.
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
You know, maybe we can't stop you from thinking it yet. Maybe that's going to come
later.
Yeah,
Mitt Romney.
But,
I'm sorry.
Please,
oh Lord, children.
I am so far left. I'm all the way around the globe again.
Michael, Coach, if you were a dressage horse, what kind of dressage horse would you be?
That's a good question.
Well, I would be a Hershey.
Of course you would. I'd have to chew on you because I love chocolate.
I bet you do.
Do you love chocolate,
kid? Oh, my God. All over the floor, he would.
You guys, it's been a hilarious time. I've kept you a little bit longer than I needed to, but I want to thank you all for coming on at Home with Victoria. Let's go to Teresa and tell us exactly where's the play running, how long is it running till?
We are at the Macha Theater in West Hollywood, and we are on Kings Road. I'm actually not looking at the exact address right now, but we're right off Santa Monica Boulevard. Oh, wait a minute. I do have it. The Macha Theater. I'm lying. I don't have it.
It's 1107. I have it, Therese.
All right. So we're there. At the moment, we've extended until July 1st. We're selling out. We're getting lots of great press. So we hope to extend for much longer. So please come see us. Please come, and we'll come and talk to you after the show because we love meeting everybody.
Yes.
Well, I think this is what's going to happen. I think you're going to actually go into an overextended run, and then eventually that's going to come to New York.
Yeah, that would be really great.
That's where I can
actually
see this going.
We would love to take it. I mean, we've talked about maybe taking it to Palm Springs, maybe to the Edinburgh Festival, and that could lead to it to going to London. I mean, there's a lot, P-Town, New York. Yeah, the show really has, it's the response, the audiences across the board are really enjoying it, and just the subject matter is something that I think that speaks to a lot of people, and it has a kitsch factor and the old Hollywood that we miss, and it's just an enjoyable show. It's well-written, and it's just a lot of fun, because it really is an inclusive kind of experience for the audience and the cast.
Absolutely. Stephen, let's make mention of your fantastic director.
Our director, Odalise.
Odalise.
What?
I just said Odalise.
She it was her idea and concept to bring the show to West Hollywood. She really believed in it. And she cast me first, only because I had done Betty Davis before. And I was actually at the auditions with Michael and Therese, and she's the one that's like put us all together and sort of gave us this platform to which to present this show to people. And it's really been an awesome experience working with all these people, because there's only Odalise, Therese, Michael, me, and a stage manager. And so it's like a little crew. And what's so great about it is she's created this nucleus where we can be outrageous and fun. And it's just been a delightful time.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, I think she can have done the job without the three of you. Michael Heather Gray, Stephen Foster, Therese McLaughlin. I think you guys are all brilliant. I can't wait to have cocktails with you guys and invite you down to the house for barbecue and a swim. So please make sure that's on your agenda sometime this summer. But I want to take the time to thank you. And Victoria does too. I'm so sorry she was bitch slapped off.
Yeah.
But I like to use the word bitch slap anyway, so and so does she. But I can't thank you guys enough. Have congrats on a great extended run. I really can't wait to see you in New York.
Thank you, Michael. I look forward to coming to New York and bitch slapping New York.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You guys can all stay at my house.
Okay.
You got it. A deal.
Absolutely.
And bathing suit optional. It's cool.
Bathing suit optional.
I want to sleep in the middle.
All right. You got it, baby girl.
Love you guys. You have a great night, and thanks again, everybody.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you.
Take care.
Take care.
Have fun.
Bye.
Love you. Inappropriate gropes to all. Ah, oh, that was Michael Taylor Grace, Stephen Foster, and Therese McLaughlin. Fantastic cast of Bitch Slapped. Thank you to Sandy for calling in, and thank you for listening tonight. I'm so sorry Victoria couldn't make it back into the system, so I don't know what's going on, but want to give thanks to the cast, and also want to give thanks to Molly Hunt. Molly, I know things happen. We're just having a little fun here, but please check out Molly Hunt on YouTube, Twitter, MySpace, and Facebook. And many thanks to all those listening in chat. Gina from California, sorry you didn't have sound for some of it. Guest 5209, Marby, great show. Michael Taylor Gray, M. Stegan, my sister in the house, Sandy from Nebraska, Shannon Sibyl from the UK, Stephen Foster, and Therese McLaughlin. We're going to go ahead and play out with a little bit of music from Molly Hunt. Go ahead and check her out. Fun fact about Molly Hunt, she's actually opening up for Loretta Lynn this summer, so hopefully she can go ahead and find some time to be with us. But until next time, I'm Michael Kay for At Home with Victoria, and this is Molly Hunt with Go There. Good night, everybody.
She's got a plain white shirt and mama's old rings, second-hand shoes under hand-me-down jeans, but she don't care what others might think about that. There's something that
with Victoria, an interactive news and entertainment show on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Download us on iTunes as a free podcast and like us on Facebook. I'm Shelley Rand, musician and announcer for At Home with Victoria. Download my CD on iTunes and Amazon and friend me on Facebook.